Now, our next guest on this show is Bernie Krause, author of The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. Bernie, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much.
Bernie, you've spent the best part of the last 40 years recording ecological soundscapes, amassing as well of over 15,000 sounds, half of which sadly no longer exist in the natural world. Can you explain to our listeners what an ecological soundscape is?
Yes, Owen. It's the sound of the natural world. We're talking about, you know, when we listen to sound, we hear the entire soundscape, whether it's an urban soundscape or a rural soundscape or natural in the wild. And these soundscapes are made of three sources. The first source is the geological sources like wind and rain and water. And the second is the kind of biological, non-human sound, like birds and insects, frogs, the things that we hear that in the natural world that are wild. And the third is called anthropophony, or the sounds that humans make. And together, all of these things make up the soundscape in various combinations. And the one thing that I'm concerned about is the recording of the sounds of the natural world, the sounds that come from the wild, that we call the biophony, meaning bio meaning life, and phone from the coming from the Greek meaning sound. So the sounds of living organisms.
Okay.
And what happens when we listen to those sounds is it gives us a real good sense of, it's a narrative of place. And by that I mean it tells us a story about how humans are doing in the natural world.
Right. And how did you actually come to actually start recording these sounds? Where did the interest come from?
Well, I don't see very well, so my whole world is informed by what I hear.
So your kind of heightened senses, really?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not blind or anything. Obviously, I drive, and you don't want to be on the road when I'm there. But
no.
the important thing is that I really understand the world more through what I hear than anything else. And so I started off when I was very young as a musician, studying classical music, and then switched to guitar when I was 13. I guess the hormones kicked in then. And I became really interested as time went on in being outside in the natural world rather than being enclosed in a club or a recording studio. And finally, at one point, after my late music partner Paul Beaver and I introduced the synthesizer to pop music and film.
Wow.
In the mid-60s, we did some really interesting work at that point and introduced the Moog synthesizer on the West Coast to the pop and film industries. And so we did an album for Warner Brothers called In a Wild Sanctuary.
Okay.
And In a Wild Sanctuary was the first album ever to use ecology as a theme. So we had to figure out how to do, how to integrate the sounds of whatever it was we didn't understand at that time, because we had no idea what that really meant. But we were about to find out.
That's really pushing the boundaries, really, as well, like incorporating like nature into it.
Yeah, especially in 1968.
Yeah.
When nothing had been done. But there had been a book written in America in 1963 called Silent Spring. And Silent Spring was a very important book by Rachel Carson. And the whole idea was that if we were not very careful, we're not going to have any natural sounds at all in the world. And this had to do mostly with chemicals like DDT.
Yeah.
Well, Paul and I, when we started to work on In a Wild Sanctuary, Paul refused to go outside and record, so that left it up to me. And I went out with a small recorder and a pair of stereo mics, really the first time that had been attempted for an album. And I began to record natural soundscapes around the San Francisco area, which is where I lived at the time. And it was okay. It was fairly quiet then. Certainly not as noisy as it is now. And I got these sounds of streams and the ocean waves and material like that, and incorporated that into the album. And it was the first time that natural sounds had ever been used as a component of orchestration. Well, I was so taken from working outside when I turned that recorder on for the first time. It completely changed my life. The whole world opened up. It was magical. The space and the birds flying overhead from right to left, because, you know, we're in stereo, so it's only right to left that it happens. And it was an epiphany for me. And I just made up my mind right then and there. This was October of 1968, that I was going to spend, I was going to try to find a way to spend the rest of my life outside recording and capturing natural sound.
What a way to spend your days.
That's
pretty good. But would the inspiration come from, like, the experimentation? Like, you were involved in, like, folk music, and then you went through to the electronic kind of field. So were you always kind of looking for kind of an inspiration through sound, or that form, that medium, really?
Well, that was the only way that I got inspiration.
Yeah.
I worked with a folk group called the Weavers. And I had the... I ostensibly replaced Pete Seeger in that group.
Wow.
Yeah, and then went on to, like I said, introduced electronic music to a number of fields. And then, you know, with all the egos and the smoke and the rest of the stuff, chemicals that were going on at that time, I just got really bored with it.
Yeah.
And I had to find a way to do something that was a contribution for my own life.
So you were kind of experimenting in a different way, really, to...
Yeah, but here's the kicker. You know, the what I found is, in working with natural soundscapes, there were a couple of people who were doing some research with groups that live much more connected to the natural world than we do in the West.
Okay.
And what they discovered and introduced me to was the idea that these groups have no distinction between nature and themselves. They don't even have a word for nature. They don't have a word for music. They don't have a word for musician or artist or performer. These people use the sounds of the rainforests in which they live. These are people who live in the Central African Republic, a group called the Bayaka Pygmies.
Okay.
There's a group in the Amazon called the Hivaro. There's one in Papua New Guinea called the Kalali, and these groups that live very closely to the natural world in the forests, they live in the forest. They use the sounds of the forest as a natural karaoke orchestra with which they perform. By that I mean they use those sounds as a backup band. That's their backup.
So it's just, they're just incorporating, and it's just natural to them, really.
It's natural to them, and it's part of their lives. It's the spiritual source of their lives. It's the musical source of their lives. And that's how animals taught us to dance and sing.
Wow. So there's the orchestra. And do animals dance or sing? You know,
of course they do. Of course they do. There are all these great BBC programs that with David Attenborough showing these lemurs jumping around and dancing. The Native Americans in North America do these great bear dances and deer dances and buffalo dances. Of course animals dance.
And what kind of, like, does the sound change for the animals from different environments if they move from, when they start migration, does the pitch or tones change?
Well, it depends on where they are. Remember, if a vocalization is, excuse me, if the behavior of an animal is dependent on its vocalization, then the vocalization, the transmission and the reception of that vocalization needs to be heard. So what these animals do is they find bandwidth. It's just like on a television station or a radio station that finds its own channel in which to vocalize, and so that it stays out of the way of others and its voice isn't masked. And it's from that collective, it's from the collective animal voices, in other words, all of these animals singing together, that came from habitats we once lived in, that we picked out and imitated, because we're great mimics, the rhythms, the melodies, and the arrangements of sound as we heard them.
And as you said, mimics there, I take that some animals must be, or plants, must be either, you know, there must be some introverts or extroverts out there. Have you seen kind of any show-offs out there?
Oh, there are big show-offs out there. There are some birds that dominate the acoustic territory at times. There are birds that dominate it at others. Not only is this kind of biophony frequency-based or bandwidth-based, it's also temporally based. When one bird stops singing, another bird comes in and begins to sing its voice or its song.
So you could have incredibly rowdy neighbors.
Oh, absolutely.
And tell me this, Bernie, like when you're recording these amazing sounds, like your presence, does that scare them off? So is daytime recording more easier or is nighttime more favorable or how does it work?
Well, the way I work is I'll go into a habitat and I'll set up my equipment and then I'll walk away 100 meters or so and just sit very quietly for long periods of time and just let the whole biophony unfold. And typically the best times to do that is certainly in a temperate zone like you are or like we are, is in the spring when the density and the diversity of sounds is greatest. And you start at just, like a half an hour before dawn until about half an hour after the sun rises. And that's your best time of day to actually hear these sounds. You've got to do it away from domestic animals and as far away from a road as you can, because the microphones will pick up sound a long way away. That's called the dawn chorus.
Okay.
And then the evening chorus is equally beautiful, but in a different way. And it starts, kind of around, half past seven or half past eight. And it goes it's like a half an hour before the sunset and then half an hour after. And it's really a gorgeous time. A gorgeous time to listen to these sounds.
You could have a few early risers or a few party animals, depending where what time of day you get there at.
Yeah, well, you definitely have to be crazy to do this. It's worth it.
And you're doing this in isolation, and you're sitting there, in the middle of the night or the early morning. What sound has actually really surprised you?
Well, the most surprising thing is of all for me is that I've discovered, first of all, that this relationship between animal sounds and our music, but also this is a biophonic expression. It's structured as if Darwin himself was defining the sonic timelines of evolution. For instance, what I mean by that is if you start recording at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the first sounds that you hear after midnight are insect sounds.
Oh.
And then, just think of this in terms of evolution. And then you hear the reptiles and amphibians, they join the chorus a little bit later, around 4 o'clock in the morning. And they establish their niches, their bandwidth, their frequencies. And then once those are set, then come the birds, and finally the mammals. And all of the critters together creating not only frequency bandwidth, but temporal niches as well. And this follows in an elegant way and illustrates in an elegant way the whole idea of evolution and the timelines of evolution. Every day that happens.
Wow. And Bernie, with the book, The Great Animal Orchestra, there's also an audiobook and an ebook. Is that right?
Yes.
And basically, where do you see your work continuing on in the future?
I want to go fishing.
You want to go fishing?
I just want to see this work carried on by other students and interested people, because it's such a wonderful way to enjoy and experience the natural world. And also, it's very healing to us. Not only, I could have done this on any number of subjects. I did it on music because I'm more familiar with music, but I could have done it on religion because these natural soundscapes are the expressions of spirituality, the first expressions of spirituality that we understood. I could have done it on medicine, because natural soundscapes are healing.
Healing, yes.
I could have done it on natural history or literature, the way that sound was incorporated into literature and expressed. So there are any number of subjects. I've identified 24 of them at least that I could have and I'm hoping that other people, that I've inspired other people to actually begin to listen and do the same thing.
Well, you've inspired me, and you've also inspired a lot of our listeners. I'd say just from reading the book, it's outstanding. It's blown me away anyway as a massive nature lover.
Well, thanks so much.
But have to ask before you leave, do you have any plans of coming to Ireland to do any recordings?
No, I'm going to be about two-thirds of the way there. I'm going to be in Iceland working with Bjork in a couple of weeks.
But, wow.
Well, thanks.
And Bernie, I'll just plug the book one more time for you.
And it's The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places, available on paperback and hardback. Bernie Krause, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much, Ewan.
Bernie Krause is the author of The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. You can also find more information on the work of Bernie Krause on wildsanctuary.com.